You're listening to Veeam Partner Perspectives with Eric Dougherty.
Welcome to the Veeam Partner Perspectives podcast. I'm Eric Dougherty. My guest today is Jason Buffington, our VP of Market Strategy here at Veeam. Jason has the distinguished honor of being my only three-time guest on the podcast. So Jason, welcome back.
Three times is a charm, right? First two, now we're going to make it right.
So. I have a feeling, we keep practicing. One of these days we'll get it right, right? I have a feeling this won't be the last time either, because you constantly, just in the nature of what you do, are always coming up with great new stuff that is excellent to share with partners, which, I'm going to, if anybody wants to know about Jason's background that doesn't know already, I'm going to use this as an opportunity to plug other podcasts of mine that he's been on and say, go listen to those to get the background on him. And also, there's a lot of great information in there, so you should be listening to them anyway. But today we're going to talk about something that just dropped last week while we were all at VeeamON, and that's the ransomware trends report for 2024, which is fresh off the presses coming out of Florida.
Yeah, super excited about this. We do a lot of research at Veeam, and the research is meant to power our product strategy, right? So what features we need to build next. It certainly powers our go-to-market, right? So how do we talk about this stuff? My main goal is to, and this is the reason why we give it away free, main goal is to help people have smarter conversations. Right. So the backup admins and the sec pros are not talking enough. The execs and the partner aren't talking enough. Right. And so and sometimes they just don't know what to talk about. And bringing fresh data and saying, hey, this is what 1,200 other folks experienced. Does this match us? Would we survive if it hit the same way as them? Data is a great way to drive a fresh conversation. So thanks for having me. So hopefully we can start some new conversations today.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. I think this is the first time we've talked about this particular report. The other two were about the data protection trends. So this is the first time for this one. Now, you mentioned 1,200 respondents. Are those 1,200 respondents Veeam customers, or what's that sample?
No, definitely not. All right. So here's the thing. super important. Everybody hears this part. All of the research that I'm responsible for is always unbiased. So we use third-party research panel companies. They vet the respondents for us, and we just simply describe the kind of person we want to record the data. So in this case, they had to have self-identified that their organization suffered at least one cyber attack in the preceding 12 months. And they had to self-report they were in one of three job-specific roles. They either had to be the backup admin, a cybersecurity professional, or a CISO. And the idea behind that was there is no human smart enough to cover that entire gamut for an organization, right? That's why so many, even large enterprises, lean into partners and say, we need more expertise than we can afford to have on staff. So we need to supplement our knowledge base and our implementation with outside expertise. So we wanted to make sure that we surveyed all three of the personas most involved in prevention and remediation. And candidly, Eric, some of the most interesting data was when those three personas didn't agree on the answer to the question. It basically tells me, hey, the CISO might be a little naive and the backup admin is not near as confident as you think. There's some great insights that comes out of that.
Yeah, I would think so. Isn't that always seems to be the case, is that folks in the field, at the front lines, see things totally different than the people that are, back at the base. And if you're not getting that information through, and I've always said, and the perfect example of that is what you just said, if they're not all communicating, I think part of being a trusted advisor type consultant is being a counselor, group therapy counselor for people. And this is one of those examples where I think that still holds true.
Yeah. I started my career as an SC at a local VAR in Dallas, Texas. And you go into an environment for 4 or 5 weeks and you learn enough about it. And I was responsible for deployments. And so you'd drop in the servers and you drop in the backup and you do some user training and you go off to the next one. But I was always there to help, right? So how can I help you with this problem? And then go on to the next one. It amazes me, fast forward 35 years, how often I will come into a large customer meeting And people are introducing each other and realizing they work for the same company, right? There are people on the cyber team that don't know the people on the backup team, and they're intimidated to talk to anyone with a C in their title. They're not talking. And the meeting was put together by the partner because the partner knew all of them.
Yep. And the partner needs that info that they all have.
Yeah. Yeah. Even some of the Veeam sellers didn't know everyone in the room, but the partner did.
Yep.
So this is why one of the things that we talk about is, cyber resiliency starts in the boardroom, doesn't start on raised floor.
Yeah.
Right? So.
Yeah. And I think that's so important because it's not just, I think the security conversation as it's evolved over the last few years really brings that communication breakdown to light more so than anything, because that's those slips in the and cracks in the communication are where the bad guys love to live.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it used to be not until just a few years ago. And it's certainly ransomware on the front page of every newspaper and website is why this wall is breaking down. But it wasn't that many years ago that the standard operating procedure for the security team was often referred to as the great big book of no. Right. You can't do this. You can't do that. You can't be productive. What are you doing? Just, lock down your data. Right. As opposed to the backup teams, like, just show me where it's at, because I can't recover it if I didn't back it up. I
mean, right. Exactly.
And thankfully, we're in a place now where we're in a much healthier spot, but there is still a lot of room to grow.
Yeah. And I think that the reports highlight that, especially now that we have had three of them. Three is enough to start showing some trends. Right. So,
yes.
So now at that point, as you see them, what are you seeing? Are things getting better, worse? I mean, obviously, the answer is probably going to vary from question to question, because I'm guessing even if we don't ask the dead on exact same question every year, we ask close enough that you can make some sort of trends out of it.
About 60% of most of the surveys that we do are verbatim, word for word, year over year. And the reason is because some of those most important topics, trend lining, is actually more interesting than the data itself. Now we're going to talk about ransomware today, but I'll give you an example. The cloud protection trends report that we haven't talked about yet, by the way, that
will be coming soon.
One of the things in that report was how important is it that backup as a service be delivered by the first party, who makes the software, right? We've been tracking that question since 2020. And back in 2020, it was like number 9 on the list, right? And then it was 7. And then it was 4, and then it was 1, and then it was 1 again, right? We did it 5. I have it in 5 different surveys. And it's like, oh, then I guess we ought to deliver backup as a service from Veeam. But it's things like that that will affect our strategy. But the trend line was much more interesting, especially when it's consistently raising or lowering in priority, much more interesting than just the static data on its own. But we'll talk about cloud a different day. We got some ransom stuff to lean into this.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess when people ask, first off, we've already established that everyone in here has experienced at least one attack over the past year.
Yep.
So I guess the bottom line question is then for them, did they have to pay, and did it work paying? What did the survey show us? Survey says?
Simon says, okay, so a couple things about this that are kind of heartbreaking. 4 out of 5 organizations paid the ransom. All right, so 1,200 victims, they averaged 2.1 attacks in the year. So call it 2,600-ish attacks or represented in the panel.
So that says to me now it's not even if but when, but how often.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, in one of our other projects, we figured out more organizations got hit quarterly 4 or more times than believe they did not get hit at all.
Yikes.
So yeah, so that is a doomsday scenario, and I think it's page 2 of the ransomware report. So go download that stat itself. But okay, but here's some stats that ought to freak you out a little bit. 4 out of 5 organizations actually did pay the ransom. Whether or not they had a pay or not pay policy, whether or not there was a government regulation that said don't kowtow to terrorists, when everything was said and done, 4 out of 5 actually paid. All right, that is problem statement number 1.
Still that high. I did not expect. Now I've looked at the report, so I'm feigning my shock a little bit, but I still did not expect that to be that high.
No, it's actually getting a little higher. Here's the part that actually is more troublesome. So of those that paid, 1 out of 3 that paid the ransom still could not recover all their data, right? So imagine you go to your CIO, you free up the budget, you throw out the Bitcoin, maybe you get the magic wand, maybe you don't. The wand doesn't work, or you didn't get one. You've already paid the Bitcoin. There is no refund policy on Bitcoin, by the way. One out of three that paid still could not recover afterwards.
Wow.
Flip that over. Okay, I said four out of five, so that's actually 81% out of 100 paid. Of the rest that didn't pay, 4%, there was nothing, no ransom asked, right? It was arson. They weren't there for money. They just wanted to do damage.
Pure evil.
Yeah. Right, yeah. And I guess for all the Veeam partners that are out there, only 15% of the respondents said, no, we did not pay. We recovered our own data. 15%. You know, now, and I make this joke a lot. One of these days, Rick Jackson's going to call me out on it. If I was CMO, my tagline for the company would be, how do I get the other 85% of victims to say, no, we did not pay. We recovered our own stuff, right?
Yeah.
Not CMO. Or any other C for that matter, which is probably how I get on your show. Anyway, so 15%, right? In fact, nearly 2x the number of people paid but couldn't recover to those that recovered without paying.
Wow.
Let me play that again in case you're driving a car while you listen to this. Nearly 2x the number of folks paid but couldn't recover versus those that recovered without paying.
So imagine they took a fraction of that they paid out and spent it on making putting their systems in a position where they could successfully guaranteed recover.
Yes, please. Let's do that.
Yeah.
Let's go to door number two. Because the other ones aren't working out, right?
Yeah.
So that those are your key stats. Four out of five paid. Of those that paid, one out of three still didn't get everything what they paid for. And frankly, the number of 15% that recovered themselves without paying is so heartbreakingly low. We got to figure out some ways to do that. And maybe that's some of the things we should talk about today.
Yeah. And that's leading into what I wanted to ask about next, which, you know, you mentioned earlier about the news and the horror stories that we hear. They all make the headlines. The worst of the worst always make the headlines. Is it as bad out there as what the headlines and the news likes to make things seem just grim? So, you know, they got to sell, you know, their stories. Is it that bad out there?
Well, let's look at it this way. So, the respondents said on average, 41% of their production data was affected by the attack.
So approaching half.
Yeah. Yeah. Or even if you just call it two out of five, right?
Okay.
So, you know,
sounds better.
I've seen your office before, right? So think about all that paraphernalia on the wall.
Yeah.
Let's say if two out of every five pieces caught on fire, how you feel?
I'd be very upset. I have five guitars hanging on my wall over here, and
all right,
I don't
so
want to lose
five
any of them.
Caught on fire.
I'd be not happy.
Here's the other part of that. We asked them how much of whatever was affected were they able to recover? Half. 57% actually. So look at your five guitars because those matter to you.
Yeah.
Imagine that fire is on two of them. And after you spray them down with a hose, one of them is irrevocably lost and the other one just has some scarring on the edges.
And I don't get to choose which one of
and
those.
And you don't get to
that.
Choose which
so,
one.
Yeah. No, that'd be very upsetting.
Now you got guitars. How about for all the kids at home or actually for parents on the call today, pictures of your kids when they were little. Don't get to take those back. You can't go buy another one.
No.
Right? How about pictures of your grandparents when they were in World War II? Can't take that picture again, right?
No.
So two out of five of whatever you care about goes into the shredder, and you're lucky to get just over one of those two back again. So if you like algebra, the magic number is 18%. 18% irrevocably unrecoverable after everything is said and done. That's how bad it is.
Wow. So that's just basically saying without having a protection plan, give up 20% of whatever you have. That's when you put it in those tangible terms for people, that's very jarring. And you're saying 20%. My first thought when you talked about the pictures was it may not even be one whole picture. It might be half of two different pictures.
Sure. Sure.
It could be any mix of it or a quarter of four or something like that, you know.
Or what if it's, you know, hey, I got 100 pictures. These 50 I could do without. These 50 really matter. You don't get to pick.
No. Well, that's the thing with the data too, right? It's like you lose half your data. Right. It's like, well, the weak half, you know, the stuff I didn't need.
I even had one company I was talking with a while ago, and he said, yeah, the only thing we got hit with was the mailroom. It's like, oh, okay, that's interesting. Yeah, the customer was UPS. You know, so shipping actually matters. I mean, yeah. I'm not using UPS. I'm using that for effect. But my point is, you can't even justify it as a single line of business or a single kind of app.
Right.
Because unless you understand the business process that depends on IT, you might be dealing with the most important or the lowest priority. But chances are there is nothing low priority still running in IT. We've kind of weaned all that out just based on economics.
Yeah.
So as far as how bad it is, those are your magic numbers, right? Which is probably why so many organizations, whether they want to or not, are paying the ransom.
Yeah. And it makes sense. You can't run the risk. But the more that word gets out that of those people that are paying and not getting what they want, now you're in a real conundrum.
Yeah.
Because it's not a guarantee. Now you might as well just take that money over to Vegas and just start gambling on it to get your business back up and running, because you're basically doing that.
Yeah, one out of three odds. You know, I know gamblers that would say, hey, two out of three, I like my chances.
They would take that. Yeah, in a heartbeat.
But let's talk about why that is. Why is it that only 15% of the victims said I recovered without paying? So let me offer this, and this is specifically for the partner ecosystem, because there's a couple technology things that I think are driving why these behaviors are as disappointing as they are. In 96% of the cyber attacks from this survey, the backup repository was specifically targeted by the bad actor. 96%. Right. And oh, by the way, in 76%, the bad actor did successfully encumber the backup repository. Right. So let me make this real for you. So you and I have a buddy named Joe. Right. Yep. I don't know if Joe's been on the call yet before, but let's assume we're down in Florida. Joe is taking us out on a boat for the day. Joe throws me overboard. Right. Joe wants to sell me a life preserver. Now, if I can swim back to the boat, I can save myself. I don't have to buy Joe's life preserver. If there's other stuff floating around, like a little dinghy hanging off the back,
yep,
I don't have to buy Joe's life preserver. So if Joe wants to increase the likelihood that I will buy his life preserver, he's going to remove my ability to save myself. Yep. Pull up the ladder, put a hole in the dinghy, whatever it is, remove my ability to save myself. And that's what the bad actor is doing. 96% of the time, they're trying to remove your ability to save yourself. And in 3 out of 4 cases, they are successfully debilitating your ability to save yourself. So now the only thing you have left is to pay for Monahan's expensive life preserver, which may or may not even work.
Right. Yeah. It might have a hole in it too. That's
the same guy I was talking about. Yeah.
that brings up exactly, you know, the thoughts that we're having. And that's that there's, with there being no guarantees, paying that money, first off, you're going to get less people doing it. You're also going to not have insurance that's going to want to pay for those sorts of things too. And also what the 15% number is telling me is not enough people are doing what we at Veeam feel, just because we talk to each other a lot, should be the obvious. And that's immutable backups, multiple copies in multiple locations that are all immutable, things like that. We take that anymore as, you know, to keep with the gambling stuff, table stakes, but it clearly is not out in the wild yet.
Preach, brother, preach. Yeah. So there are three stats here that I hope partners can convert into interesting conversations. And that's the first one, right? So 96% of the backup repositories get affected. 3 out of 4 times the bad actor removes your ability to save yourself. And yes, the hero of the day is immutability, right? Yeah. Here's the second one. There's a myth in Hollywood. Well, there's two myths that come from Hollywood when it comes to cyber. The first one is that some teenager types in this magic key and boop, we're back up and running again. That is not how cyber works, right? But the other one is, you know what? This is going to be a tough day, but we're going to wipe all the servers to make sure they're clean. We'll start restoring the data. It'll be fine, right? Here's the fun part. Only 1 out of 7 victims said they were able to wipe all their servers and start over. For the average organization that was a victim said 31% of their infrastructure was not allowed to be wiped and restored.
Yeah.
Now, forensics.
Yes. Your data center is a crime scene.
Law enforcement. Yes. That's actually a big one. Insurance, right? You ever got a ding in your car and you couldn't go get it fixed yet because the insurance broker didn't come and take pictures yet?
Yep.
right? So on average, 31% of the infrastructure was ineligible to be wiped and restored. So
the other thing is, how much do you trust it anymore?
Right. You right. Know? So
same thing. I had a car I was in an accident in, and somehow it got badly damaged, but it was, they fixed it and they said, oh, it's roadworthy. And I said, I don't trust this thing anymore. You know, I'm trading this guy in. And it's kind of the same thing, because who knows what's latent in that server? Because just because you found an attack doesn't mean you found the only attack.
Yeah, if you've been that good at scanning, you wouldn't have gotten breached in the first place. Right. So, but yeah, so two takeaways, and actually you just hit my third point while we're here. But so the second takeaway, though, is you got to plan for more infrastructure than you already have. So whether that means and in Veeam language, that's we call it mobility. We've called it portability. Some folks call it, you know, data freedom. I don't care what you call it. But the point is that you should assume that physical is not going back to physical, that you may have to go physical to virtual. You may have VMs from VMware. They're going to have to light up back again on Hyper-V. You may have to put them in your favorite cloud. But don't plan on original metal across the gamut. So certainly that freedom story falls in. And the third one, to your point, is – kids at home should write this one down. 63% of organizations run the risk of reinfection during restore, right? So you're talking about, you know, what if there's still stuff out there? Only 37% of organizations have the ability to restore into a sandbox or a quarantine and then play that forward into production. So 37 do means 63 don't. 5 out of 8 environments run reintroduction. And let me put it to you in real world terms. When I was a middle school kid, yes, the school bully did take my lunch money more than once. And once the bully has taken your money once, the next time they're hungry, they know you'll pay out, right? Yeah, average victim last year got hit 2.1 times, right? It doesn't mean they got breached twice. It means that maybe they didn't patch everything they should have patched. Maybe they reintroduced malware when they did the restore. Right. So, you know,
sorry, I'm just picturing it with your bully reference that they're now basically what you're doing as the person getting bullied, you're punching yourself in the face.
Yeah.
Because you're just putting the problem back in because you didn't do the due diligence to make sure it's not in your backup files in anything that you need to restore from.
You're walking by the guy in the jungle gym counting your lunch money and saying, do I carry the one or not? And then you wonder why somebody else is taking your lunch money, right? Yeah. So those are three stories that I hope every Veeam partner turns into a data-driven seller's conversation. The backup repository problem, talk about immutability. The not being able to use the hardware, talk about portability. And the risk of reinfection, talk about staged restore, right? So those are three things that are empirical problems that that we actually have a hero scenario for. And I'm not normally in sales mode, but those three are just so darn obvious.
Well, and I think of those, and I also think from a partner perspective, not just a clever name for the podcast, that there's a great services opportunity in testing all of these things.
Oh, gosh, yes.
For your customers and making a managed service out of the preparation and the readiness for that. And not only just I'm talking about a health check, I'm talking about actually doing some of the things you're talking about there, recovering, making sure things are scanned and the reports are running. There's so many automated ways to do it now in our products that partners should be able to easily do something that not only A, runs the reports and gives results, but B, says what they should do to fix the problems that are found.
One thing that I want to give a plug for, you know, as long as we're talking about it, is, you know, there's a lot of complex concepts that get captured in this data, and we've tried to make them as actionable as possible. So one of the things that we actually did first time ever in the ransomware report is I think my top 7 or 8 data points that I think really matter to a conversation. We recorded them as 4-minute, what we call learning nuggets. And those are now all available on Veeam Pro Partner Portal and Veeam IQ. So that you can watch them 4 minutes at a time. Now, they're only going to find out about it if they watch your podcast, right? So I'm not trying to steal the audience. But they are on VMIQ. And in fact, in each one of them, we finished the 4-minute learning nugget with a 30-second seller's question. What's the one question you may want to ask your customer? And then what you're listening for in the answer in order to move them forward in a dialogue.
That's great. So you stretch before you go for a run or whatever. Watch these before you go into a customer call.
you're in a parking lot, you're waiting 10 minutes before you have to go to the front desk, watch two of them, right? Yeah. If you do like what Veeam does with our, we have these things called EMP, Everyone Makes Pipeline Days.
Yeah.
We make it required reading for all the inside sales and software sales development folks. Watch these before the day begins. I've done them in the past for 365. I do them for IaaS. And for this time around, we not only did them for the ransomware one, but we put those sellers' questions in for the first time. I hope folks find those useful.
I think they're a great reinforcement because while even in the format that we have here where somebody could do it while they're running or in the car or whatever, that quick reinforcement, like right before you go do the thing, is huge. And I think that that's great for that because these things are too important to, and it's, let's face it, people have a lot to commit to memory. So I'm all yep. about just small bite-sized learning.
Yep.
As yeah, I have Joe calls it, it's copyrighted term, chunk. So,
I need learning nuggets. I need to replay them on a regular basis yep. and hopefully I'm not alone.
Nothing wrong with that. I think that is a great way to learn. Switching a little different gears, but not really because this all has to do with technology, but what's some of the tech insights that you think our partners should be mindful of that you're finding in the report?
You know, I think we've covered a couple of the big ones already, right? So yeah. Certainly the backup repository is a big one. The importance of portability. I can tell you that from one of our other research projects that we did, it's like 70 some odd percent of orgs now have the ability to fail over to a cloud. Okay. And it's like 80 some odd percent of folks have the ability to fail over to another data center or alternative physical infrastructure. And if you add those two numbers up, it's like 162%. And I love that because what that means is, by the way, I'm an old school DR guy, right? So, you know, if you're trying to recover from servers, you can do that on site. If you're trying to recover from hurricanes, you got to do that elsewhere, right? So I love the fact that most organizations now have a multi-target strategy, or at least working towards that, because there's this recognition that your original metal may not be there. And depending on which metal you lose, might determine what alternate infrastructure is or is not available. So certainly, I think one of the lessons learned is around having that plan for alternative infrastructure. The other one that I really, really like from a technology perspective is we asked organizations before the attack, did you have a plan? Did you have a team? And only 2% of folks did not have a team. Only 3% did not have a plan. So the good news is 95% of folks had a plan, had a team. And then we asked as a lesson learned, what's in your plan now, right? Top three things in the plan. Verification of backups. We have something to say about that, right? Yep. Assurance of clean backups. Somewhere between inline scanning and immutability. We have something to say about that.
Yep.
And then third, pre-identified alternative infrastructure, right? Now, there's a lot of other things around comms and executive and press handling and communications, those kind of things.
Yep.
But I love the fact that tactically, the top three things is folks are asking themselves, do I have a good backup that's assured to be recoverable to a location other than where it started, right? If you have those three things, technically, you are statistically 63% more prepared than the 1,200 victims in last year's survey.
That is massively significant. And it's interesting. And I think I like the way that you have that broken out because you need those people to run cover. So the folks that actually have to go do the recovery can do it without being peppered with questions. Exactly. I know that was always back in my day when I was doing those things. That was, if I was doing something, I always wanted somebody that could, you know, don't ask me the question. I'm doing the thing. I can answer your questions, but less is getting done. If I answer your questions, go talk to this person.
Yeah. The other thing, just, you know, as far as the talking goes, I would just say this, go get the data. Right. So one of the things I love about data-driven conversations, which is why I do what I do for Veeam, is arguably the data is never wrong. Right. You take a piece of data, and I don't say that to be vain. Here's what I mean. You go to a customer and say, hey, have you been hit by ransomware? Right. Now, some of them won't tell you the truth. They'll say no.
Sure.
But when they say, I can't really talk about it. I don't really have the concepts for it. You can say, hey, well, let's talk about how 1,200 other victims, what happened to them?
Yeah.
Or when you're having a feature level conversation, you can say, you know, according to data, the top three things you need are, and the customer is either going to say one of two things. They're either going to say, well, yes, that's exactly what I need. And now you've determined need and you can move them on. Or they're going to say, no, that's not what I need. What I need is, and now you determine need and now you can move them on, right? Yeah. So either way, yes. The data helps get clarity from what the customer is looking for or get empathy to the customer's need. And then you can start to address that as that trusted counsel.
And it's a terrific way to do it because one, they don't have to let you know if they've actually had that problem.
Right.
But chances are they fit the persona of some one of those 1,200 and they'll, like you said, empathize with it and be able to give and then open up and give you more information. It's That's a great way too. Like you said, those top three things, you could build a small business just around delivering those top three things on the list. Now the
you
whole
could, couldn't
you could
you?
Do the entire thing. You really could. How about it?
Yeah.
So lots of opportunity in there. So I think that that's something that partners really need to look closely at is, are they delivering those basics? I know a lot of the partners I talk to are talking about immutability, be it on-prem, object storage, in the cloud, wherever. But let's talk about more than that and make sure we're having the recoverability conversation.
Yep.
Is there anything we didn't cover today that you really want to make sure the partners know, in addition to make sure they download and read the report themselves, because there's tons more information than we can cover in a 30-ish minute podcast?
Sure. You know, a couple things. You know, let me share an address so you can email strategicresearch@veeam.com. It's not my personal, but I'm one of the three folks that answer it. So if you have questions about the data, you know, I'm certainly happy to help with that. I think the one thing that, you know, we started the conversation talking about how the groups don't talk to each other, but it's not just in the pre-planning phase, right? So one of the other questions that was asked in the survey was, did you engage any third parties as part of remediation specifically of that ransomware attack, right? 94% of the victims did bring in third parties during the during remediation. And for 38% of them, the reseller partner or service provider was who they brought in to help with that. And I just, again, you're having your worst day ever. Your boss's boss and all of their peers are all on your back for how quick can we get up again. Wouldn't it be nice if the person who helped you with the plan, and is probably more level-headed at this moment than you are, was yeah. there to be part of the answer? Huge opportunity for the partner pre, during, and after these attacks. Hopefully this helps create some new conversations to get them there.
We'll call it pre-mediation services.
Pre-mediation services.
And remediation services.
I don't think marketing's going to like that one, but you go for it if you can.
Hey, you know what? It's up for grabs. I'm not going to copyright it. Somebody can use it if they like. But that I totally agree that the services abound. And before you even get too excited about the services, check if they're even doing the basics. Those three things.
Oh, yeah.
They're doing those. If they're not doing those three things, great place to start and to get inside and really help increase the ability of a customer to thwart ransomware.
Yeah. When you watch those nuggets, those seller's questions are going to line up with, you know, hey, the back repository often gets hit. Let's talk about, are you immutable today? Right. Hey, some of the metal's not going to be reusable. Hey, let's talk about where your alternate targets are today. Third one, you know, hey, you run a high risk of reinfection. How do you ensure that today? Right. Those are some really awkward questions that can lead to some great outcomes. With the partner's help.
Yeah. And the best thing you can hear, and the best thing you can hear is the honesty of, it's the rare company that's going to be able to say they're doing all three.
Nope.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
So Jason, I thank you again, as always, as my new regular guest. Maybe one day down the road, you'll become the Ed McMahon to my Johnny Carson. Who knows? You'll just be my regular sidekick. But for now,
you're
my favorite guest as a third time guest. I'm hoping that gets other people going, hey, why aren't I on more often? Fine. Welcome. Welcome to have folks on. Just bring me great content like Jason does.
Thank you, my friend.
I really appreciate it. And everyone, download that report and get out there and start asking these tough questions to your customers.
This has been Veeam Partner Perspectives with Eric Dougherty. Thank you for listening.